If you're struggling in your career, business, or life, this podcast is for you. 9/11 survivor Ari Schoenbrunn shares inspiring interviews so you too can rise like a phoenix from the ashes to live your best life. Here's your host, Ari.
Welcome to Whispers and Bricks. My name is Ari Schoenbrunn. I'm your host. We are now going into part six of Sabra Mark's amazing story from the Holocaust. Please help me welcome Sabra Marcus. Sabra, how are you? Last time we spoke, your mom had done some amazing miracles that, you know, hiding the saccharin in your brother's diapers, which was amazing. And then your dad came home, your papa came home. And then we left off. It seems that the Russians came to the door again, and they knocked on the door and they came to arrest your papa. And I think that's where we stopped. So what happened?
So before I go there, I forgot to mention that while those soldiers were in the house searching, they kept walking by next to my brother saying, "They stink. Why don't you do something, you lazy woman? Why don't you wash them? They stink. The place stink. You stink. All of you stink. Everything here stinks. Is your daughter filthy also?" And Mama looked at me and I could see that she says to nod yes. And I said, "Yes, I also stink." I was no longer in diapers, but boy, did I stink. So the door gets broken this time, hanging halfway off the hinges. "Marcus, you're under arrest. You're a thief." Somebody came forward and told on him. Now, obviously it was a lie, but he was promised a loaf of bread. He would have said anything.
Oh, God.
It was one of the workers that worked with Papa, someone that pretended to be his friend. But a loaf of bread can do many things. They took Papa away. My mother was a prolific letter writer. I think everyone on earth has received at least one of her letters. She kept in touch with everyone just to find out if they're still alive, if Hitler didn't get them. She remembered she had a cousin in Moscow, a woman that is or was in charge of transportation. She was a very high ranking officer in charge of transportation for Mother Russia during the war. She wrote to her letters and wrote and wrote and wrote, and was hoping that she could at least influence someone to let Papa go. My Papa was sent up to the Ural Mountains, where the coal mines are. Mama was informed, and everyone in the camp there knew. No one leaves those mountains. No one leaves those caves. No one leaves that place. Once you're there, you become part of the scenery, you become part of slave gangs, and that's it. You just have to write your own epitaph. That's it. You're done. Papa tried to stay by the wayside, mind his own business, stay in his own cell, stay away from people. My father's English and my father's Russian, you could tell he was not a native Russian. And if you listen very carefully, you could tell it's a Jew. And those criminals were not about to allow a Jew live. And so they came to a conclusion that Papa better be put in isolation or they'll be missing a worker. Time was going by. Time was going by, weeks are going by. Then one day there is noise. It sounded like a revolution was taking place. And in essence, it was a revolution. The convicts, the prisoners decided, working so hard as they have, not having food and drinking horrifically filthy water and becoming more and more sick, was not going to be a way to survive. And so they decided, you're going to be dead in a few weeks or a few months anyway. Maybe some will succeed and get out of that hell and make it into civilization and survive. So it was worthwhile to have an uprising in that prison to see maybe a handful would survive. So Papa sees many of them running by his cell. And one of them screamed at him, "Hey, Marcus, come join us. You may be one of those that will survive. Come, Marcus." Papa says to himself, "Well, my chances of surviving staying here are none. I might as well take a chance. It's a prison uprising. It's stupid. You shouldn't join it. Go do it." So Papa joins them and he's running. And he follows everyone that's running. It was done so well that they were actually outside the prison gates, outside that entire confinement. Here's someone breathing heavy next to him. He looks and it's one of the prison guards. And the prison guard says to him, "Hey, Marcus, what's wrong with you, fool? Why are you running with them?" He says, "Well, better to die in free air than be in that stench." He says, "But your release papers came this morning. I'm chasing you to bring you back, you idiot. If you keep running with them, you will die for sure. I have papers to take you to the train to send you back to Marie. You do?" So Papa says, "I don't believe you." He says, "Look." He shows him a big package. He says, "A letter doesn't come in a package." He says, "It's full of money. Black market money." He says, "For what?" He says, "For your transportation to get out of here and to go to Moscow to your cousin."
Wow.
What the black market can do is quite phenomenal, because you see, just because you don't know how to deal with it or how to operate it, doesn't mean there are some people that aren't proficient in that field. So he grabbed Abba, in Hebrew, his father. He grabbed my father by the arm, and the two of them are running because my father's feet are in terrible shape. They're full of blisters and they're bleeding. So he drags and carries and helps him. And he said, "I was to release you when I came to your cell. You weren't there. What is wrong with you?" He says, "I was going to die of starvation and disease." "Not according to your cousin. Who the hell is your cousin? He was able to send money. Look at this money." So Father says, "Well, why didn't you keep it?
Yeah, that's
why are you so generous?"
That's exactly what I was thinking. Why wouldn't he have kept the money?
Why would he even say that the money arrived?
Right.
He says, "Because that person, cousin of yours, is so big. If you are not found alive where she says you should be, and if you don't say you received this amount, the commandant of this prison will slit my throat."
Oh, my God. Wow.
So he said, "I will take you to the station. I brought you clothing. I brought you socks and shoes. I made sure everything is big. I used money from your package to buy everything. And I'll do all this on one condition." And Papa says, "Oh, I knew there would be a condition." "What condition, Tavarish?" And he said, "The condition is we go half and half on the money. I'm starving." And Papa looked at him. He says, take me there. Show me a way to get back to my wife and children. And I will let you have half of what's there. He says, I already used some of it for clothing and food for you. I have packages. So in that, you can say he was kind. Or he could have taken all the money and escaped the prison during the prison break.
Sure.
And Papa would have had nothing. He got him to a place where he was able to find rides to go home. He came back. Again, my father, the absolute eternal optimist, goes, finds a job in a different bakery. You gotta eat. And Mama says, we have some money now. And he said, Dvorah, how did you do this? She says, remember cousin Galina Shotland? Your cousin, she's your cousin. Her father and your mother are brother and sister. She said, yes. You found her? I said, I wrote to Stalin. You wrote a letter to Stalin, Dvorah? Are you insane? She says, well, the letter got there, and they read the letter, and they found Galina Kogan, and she's a big hero in honor and for the love of her nation. She not only is in charge of the transportation, transport, bringing food and bringing weapons and bringing everything else to the front lines. She lost an eye in honor of her motherland. So of course they would do what she asked. Papa said, after working in the bakery for some weeks and excelling in his job and doing fantastic work, and soldiers were eating, and he was making special wonderful things for the officers, they decided that he can't be just a regular peasant. They have to make him an honorary member of the Communist Party. Papa came home that evening from work, and he said, Dvorah, that's Deborah in Yiddish, we're leaving. And she says, but Belleville, I don't think we can. Why not? She says, you're shaking. Your malaria is back. You're sick. You need to go into bed and you need to stay there. Anushka, keep an eye on the children. Again, I'm there with two toddlers. And Mama runs away. Mama comes back with a doctor, and he's got a whole bunch of little packets, paper packets, and they're full of quinine. And the doctor, I'm listening to what he says, and you are to take a glass of water, and you're to open that package, and you pour it in, and you do it so many times a day, and put all the blankets in the world you own on top of it. So while Mama was gone, I kept covering him with blankets, and he kept kicking them off, and that just went on till she came back. 2 days went by, and Papa is still violently ill. And he said, well, we have to get out of here. I did not apply for the Communist Party for the documentation. They will arrest me. I will be sent away again. She said, I went to the train station to see how we can possibly get out. There's not a single passenger's train coming by. Well, what did you see? I didn't see a train other than military trains that are going to the front. Nothing, nothing. Or trains that are carrying goods to the front. And he says, we can't stay here. Today's the last day. Pack everything we can have, everything we can use. Mama packed, so there we are. We are Chaim, and Yaakov, and I, and big pekalech, big bundles of things. And she said, why are we going to the train? He said, leave it to me, I'll take care of it. Mama spreads a blanket on the train station on the floor, only a matter of maybe 10, 15 feet from the actual railroad tracks. And we're sitting there. I'm holding on to my little brothers and I'm have my legs on one bundle and my brothers pressed against the other two. And I'm holding on to the bundles as well. And Mama is standing next to us, seeing, waiting for a signal from Papa if there's anything she needs to do. Then she sat down with us and she wasn't sitting all of maybe 5 minutes when another train came. And every train that came was full of soldiers. Half of them were leaning out the windows, hoping there was someone there that could buy a piece of something. And finally, another train came. We were there for hours and hours. And we were starving. And Mama had hidden the food in the packages. Finally, she took out a chunk of bread and gave us each for us to munch on. And the old woman came down. She says, I'll watch your children. Give me a few pieces of bites of bread, just a couple of bites. So Mama gave her a chunk of bread and she sat there guarding us. Until she decided to rob one of the packages, Mama slapped her head and told her to get out. Slapped her. I never saw my mother hit anyone. Well, a train came, again, overflowing with humans. My father said, take that big package and come stand next to me. So Mama took that gigantic package. And she came to stand next to him. The train stopped. Papa ran a few steps further to the left. He looked and looked and looked and said, Vore, come here. He grabbed my mother and I saw him attempting to push her through a window. You couldn't push anything through that window. When she got to the top, she shoved and shoved and opened the window a little more. But I said, Mama is too big. And she was a skeleton, for God's sake. And he shoved and he shoved and she got through the window. And then he shoved a package that's 50 times bigger than the window. And Mama grabbed and yanked and pulled and he pushed and she grabbed and yanked. The package went in. Papa came running, took Chaim, practically threw him into mother's arms. She pulled him through the window. Then she did with Yaakov. Then he took the packages. Then he grabbed the rag and me, the blanket that we were sitting on. He threw us to the window. Mama slapped us in. And she kept looking at us and doing this. Quiet, quiet. No one say a word. No one speak. Quiet. And I look, Mama, where's Papa? And Papa is jumping. And Mama's body is more than halfway out the window. So I was holding on to her legs. I was afraid Mama was going to fall out. So she pulled and I pulled and she pulled and I pulled. And then I saw my father's fingers holding on to the windowsill. And she dragged him in. Then I saw her holding his pants. And she dragged him and dragged him. And in he came tumbling on top of all of us. And then Papa turned immediately, sitting with his knee in my chest. And I thought he was going to crush me. And he yanked on the window and closed it. And then he looked at us and he said, Shicho. Silence. It is forbidden to speak. You mustn't speak. And there we are. We're lying on the floor, on top of packages, on top of each other. No one is speaking. We are dying of the stench. Our eyes are burning from the stench of the place. But we're not speaking. No one is speaking. And we're breathing quietly, quietly. And I hear voices from outside. I tell you, I saw them. They sneaked in through the window. A bunch of Jews. I am sure of it. I tell you, I saw them. Go look in that room. You'll see. I am telling you that, oh, you're an idiot and you're drunk. Get out of here. I tell you, I saw them. He pushed them through the window. You're an idiot. Look at the size of that window. No human can go through that window. And they pushed in big bundles. Once he started talking about all the big bundles, for sure he was a drunk and stupid. So now get rid of that bum. And they told him, you are durak, you're stupid. No one can go through that little window, let us all, an adult man and a woman and gigantic bundles. So somebody shoved him because I couldn't hear his voice anymore. And that's when the train started to move. And it's moving, and it's moving. And Papa whispered to us, is anybody in pain? Is anyone hurt? Are you all okay? Is anyone hurt? Is anyone in pain? No, Papa. No, Papa. And I dragged out my brother Yitzhak. I don't know where he was, but I had his shoulders. So I figured the rest of it was attached. So I kept pulling, and I pulling. I said, Yitzhak? He looked at me and said, that little, not Yitzhak, sorry, Yaakov. Yankale. Yankale, are you okay? Yankale. And he looked at me and smiled. Yankale was ever always ready for a smile. And there we sit. And then we know we're not moving. So Papa and Mama and the kids, we're all trying to find out where the rest of our limbs are. We were looking for arms, legs, and Mama was putting the two little ones on the big bundle. Amale, are you okay? Yes, Mama. Chaim, my leg. Okay, you okay? Yes. As we're getting organized, a fist is banging on the door.
Now, let me ask you something before you go on. Yes. What was, like, what was this? This was obviously a train car, but was there were like no people? Was it a cargo compartment,
you,
or was it?
You must have missed it when I said it was packed with soldiers going to the front.
Right, I know, but I'm saying.
Yeah, but you, I can't, I won't answer this question right now. You can have to wait another minute.
Oh, okay.
So that fist is banging on the door. You've been there a long time. Get out. You're not the only one in this train that needs to pee. And Papa said, soon, give me another minute. So he gave him another minute, and then he banged on the door again. I'm gonna pee in my pants. Get out. Come on. What's the matter with you? You're not the only one on this train. That's the only bathroom.
Wow.
Get out. And still, my father wasn't making a move. After 10 minutes of others banging and more banging and more banging, somebody yelled, maybe that drunk in the train station was right. Maybe there's a Jew hiding in there. And so Papa had to open the door because the officer said, you open the door immediately or I'm going to shoot through it. And Papa responded, if you shoot through the door, you will kill two beautiful Russian boys, future soldiers from Mother Russia. So there were no shooting. The door opened up. The problem was, you couldn't open the door. We were taking up all the space and all the air and every inch of it. So we had to rearrange ourselves. Papa said, we will need help to get out. We are stuck. How many of you? He says, a family and many bundles. Several soldiers volunteered. They helped our packages out of there and put against one of the doors by the wall. Then they started peeling out humans out of that bathroom. They brought us all out. And they stood there in shock. the size of the bundles, the size of the humans, and the number of people that came out of that battle. And the officer said, do you know the punishment for boarding a military train? And father said, is it more than death? He says, no, it is death. We're going to the front. Father said, well, had we stayed, we would have died of starvation or beatings. What are we going to do with you? Father said, I am a great cook. Armies walk on their stomachs. I can help cooking. I'll feed you. I am good. And the commandant, officer looked at him. He says, our cook got sick and stayed behind. You want to cook for us? He says, I am great. That's what I learned from my father. When many, many years ago, some anti-Semite said, can you actually dance? And I said, don't be silly. I am great. I remembered my father's words. And because it was an anti-Semite, he deserved to be put down like that. I am great. Wait till you see me. I will charge you double. And that was a magnificent big nightclub in Fort Wayne, Indiana. The number one anti-Semite club I've ever entered. Owners and patrons. So they brought us out of there. One soldier yelled, give me him. And they insisted they want to hold Yaakov in their lap and play. Then a voice from another side, from the right side of the train by the window, a beautiful tall man stood up and says, I want her. She looks just like my little girl at home. Give me to hold her. Give me that beautiful little girl. So he took me. I was handed from soldier to soldier to soldier, from one row to the next over everybody's heads. They did the same with Chaim. One soldier actually jumped up and walked over to my mother, Mamushka, Mamushka, davai. And he almost dragged her to his seat for her to sit.
Wow.
And all the soldiers kept offering us food.
Wow. 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 Okay. That's... You've been listening to Whispers and Bricks. This was part 6 of Sabra Marcus's amazing story. Until next time, when we're going to continue with part 7, listen to the whispers, avoid the bricks, and never, ever give up on your dreams. Bye for now.
So that's it for today's episode of Whispers and Bricks. Head on over to iTunes and subscribe to the show. One lucky listener every single week that posts a review on iTunes will win a chance in the grand prize drawing to win a $25,000 private VIP day with Ari himself. Be sure to head on over to whispersandbrickspodcast.com and pick up a free copy of Ari's gift and join us on the next episode.